From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, thinks he knows enough about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict to solve it. The White House advisor has apparently been working on a secret peace plan for 2 years and traveled to Israel in late May to roll it out. But his arrival coincided with political chaos in Israel as newly re-elected Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu failed to form a coalition government. Meanwhile, Kushner's position on Palestinian self-determination was on full view during a recent Axios interview where he doubted Palestinians' ability to rule themselves. Separately, at a private event, State Secretary Mike Pompeo's remarks were leaked to the Washington Post, where he claimed that Kushner's plan was, quote, unexecutable. My guest is Sonia Meyerson-Knox, Media Program Manager with Jewish Voice for Peace. Welcome to the program, Sonia.
Hi, Sonali. Thank you for having me.
So we've heard a lot about the fact that Kushner has a peace plan, but have we heard anything about what this peace plan is?
No, we have heard very little, in fact, about what is allegedly in this peace plan. And I think more concerningly, we've heard absolutely no indications that any plan coming from the Trump administration is in any way predicated on freedom for Palestinians, an end of legal discrimination, any sort of equality or ground in any sort of justice. And instead, what we've heard about mainly is a alleged plan that will create a new Palestine, quote unquote, with a variety of economic bait, which really just sounds like a new way of continuing the same amount of control of the Palestinians are already suffering from being under an illegal occupation now for over 50 years, let alone what's happening in Gaza. So I don't think that this is in any way, I don't even think they know what they're doing, but this is hardly a peace plan. This is more like a disaster plan in which Palestinians are being increasingly coerced by the Trump administration to be under even further economic duress, watching as the Trump administration moves the United States Capitol to Jerusalem, or approves Israel's right to, take over and annex the Golan, et cetera. And then being told, we've cut all your aid, but we'll give you money if you just, shut your mouths and comply. And I don't think it's not feasible.
So that view was shared by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, as we heard from the Washington Post's leaked remarks from Pompeo, where he was basically giving this address in a closed door meeting with Jewish leaders. He said that the plan was unexecutable, that it might not gain traction. He said it may be rejected, could be in the end. Folks will say it's not particularly original. It doesn't particularly work for me. That is, it's got 2 good things and 9 bad things. I'm out. So that it was those were remarks that were found in a audio recording of this private meeting that the Washington Post got its hands on. So do you think that Pompeo and other members of the Trump administration have the details of this peace plan? And if so, even those from within the administration who might have actually seen it find that it is, quote, unexecutable?
I mean, the inner workings of the sort of chronic mess that the Trump administration seems to function under are beyond exploration. But to the extent that I think many members of the Trump administration and more broadly of the diplomatic world, and certainly people that care about Palestinian rights or peace and justice in the Middle East, what we're all seeing is that the Trump administration has in no way pretended to be an honest broker. And so there was never, the Palestinian Authority has refused to negotiate with the Trump administration since the U.S. embassy was moved to Jerusalem over a year ago. So it's, in many ways, it's a non-starter from the beginning. And so whether or not people are privy to whatever details Trump's son-in-law is choosing to divulge, I think the bigger concern is that the U.S. has never been a fair broker when it comes to Israel and Palestine, and has never deemed Palestinian rights to be of equal concern or importance or legitimacy. And now, now that's plain and blatant for all of us to see. So if the United States is not a fair broker, why on earth would Palestinians ever accept any sort of quote-unquote peace plan that it's offering?
Right. And really, what is Kushner's qualification, right? I mean, we've had multiple presidents over generations claim to try to solve this issue and put forth their, you know, so-called peace plans, and some have come closer than others, and one after the other, each one has failed. And here you have an administration that is far less competent than previous administrations, and their main guy on this issue is someone who has no political experience whatsoever.
I mean, not only does he not have any political experience, he's already clearly has a very particular bias, having himself invested in the illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank. I think perhaps, though, what was most interesting to me of what has been revealed from Kushner, though, was the comment he made during this interview with Axios, when he said, you know, Palestinians are concerned about being able to pay their mortgages. And that's a lovely version of the world that doesn't actually exist in any way. I think what Palestinians living under Israeli occupation are concerned with, for example, is Palestinian parents want to be able to go to sleep at night knowing that when they won't be woken up in a pre-dawn raid by the Israeli military, in which armed soldiers drag their children into illegal military detention where they are grossly mistreated. And in fact, and that's why we are now seeing there is a bill in the U.S. Congress, House Resolution 2407, the Promoting Human Rights for Palestinian Children Living Under Israeli Occupation, that would prevent the $3.8 billion the United States gives in military aid annually to Israel from being spent in any way that allows and enables Israeli soldiers to detain Palestinian children in military prisons. Mm.
So let's actually examine what Kushner said in this interview that he gave to Axios. And I should mention that, so I have a clip that I'd like to play. He also mentioned a very important piece that isn't in this clip that we're going to play, which is that he's not sure that Palestinians can govern themselves. He said it would be high bar for Palestinians to be free of Israeli military and government interference. He also, you know, basically decided that he is someone that has the ability to decide when Palestinians should, you know, when Palestinians would get the money that, as you mentioned, this plan seems to have as its centerpiece. So let's listen to what the interviewer questioned Kushner about during the Axios interview. He raised a lot of the issues you were just saying, which is, why should Palestinians trust him?
Do you understand why the Palestinians don't trust you?
Look, I'm not here to be trusted. I'm here to...
Well, you are, frankly. I mean, to look at it from their point of view, and you're a businessman, you always look at things from their view. You've got three Orthodox Jews on the negotiating team. Two of you have, at different points, funded settlements, Jewish settlements in the West Bank. You've got the actions you've taken so far, moving the US embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. You've cut all aid to the Palestinians, including hospitals in East Jerusalem. And you've shut down the Palestinian diplomatic office in Washington. I mean, can you not see why they might not want to talk to you and that they might not trust you?
Right, so there's a difference between the Palestinian leadership and the Palestinian people. Okay.
And you think the Palestinian people would be okay with all of those things that you guys have done?
The actions we've taken were because America's aid is not an entitlement, right? If we make certain decisions which we're allowed to as a sovereign nation to respect the rights of another sovereign nation, and we get criticized by that government, the response of this president is not say, oh, let me give you more aid. So again, that was as a result of decisions taken by the Palestinian leadership. With regards to the Palestinian people, I do believe that they want to have a better life. And I do think that they're not going to judge...
They don't mind the aid being cut.
Well, they're not going to judge anything based on trusting me or trusting anyone else. They're going to judge it based on the facts and then make a determination. Do they think this will allow them to have a pathway to a better life or not?
And that is Jared Kushner during an interview on Axios. He seemed pretty out of touch with the reality on the ground, Sonia, especially in terms of the actions that have already framed his position. I think the interviewer rightly brought up the fact that some of the issues that you had brought up as well, that Trump has gone into his administration being as overtly pro-Israel as he possibly could be, even more so than his Republican predecessors, G.W. Bush, right?
Absolutely. There's been no pretense from the Trump administration from the beginning at being an honest broker. But, you know, and quite frankly, in addition to that, what we've seen coming from Kushner, like in this interview, is this incredible condensation that Palestinians somehow are not worthy of the same amount of human rights and dignity and justice and quality of life that anyone else is. His comment at the very beginning of the interview, where he basically says that he's not sure if Palestinians are fit to rule themselves. I mean, perhaps he should come to his next interview wearing a pith helmet and fully implement his colonial pretensions. It's unacceptable that you could behave that way and then think you have any claim to offering any sort of quote unquote peace deal.
So the fact that Kushner thinks that his peace deal is something that's actually going to be met positively by Palestinians, some of it is informed by what is clearly a pro-Israel bias. But how much of it is also, as far as you can tell, informed by this mistaken notion that a businessman can solve these political problems, right? We have this Republican approach, unfortunately, to government for years, which is that the president should be like the CEO of a corporation, and therefore business people are able to solve world problems if they apply their business knowledge to the issue.
It's a fascinating theory when you look, given at the quality of the world and how businesses perpetually make sure that their employees and their workers and their consumers are somehow, you know, are not given living wages and quality of life decreases and all of that. So it's a flawed premise from the beginning, of course. But I think what we've particularly seen in this case is the atrocious, callous behavior that the U.S. could arbitrarily, in the stroke of a pen, cut its funding to UNRWA, which is the United Nations wing that funds agency that funds humanitarian and relief development aid for Palestinians. You know, hospitals are closing, school projects have been shut down, clinics have shut down, there's concern about vaccination. These were commitments that the United States has made to this agency and then was just cut basically by a strategy to coerce Palestinians into taking whatever other money is offered. But as we've already seen, whether it be from Palestinian businessmen internationally and in the United States, from the Palestinian Authority, from leading Palestinian thinkers and activists and movement workers, as well as from Palestinians living under occupation and in Gaza, nobody is accepting it. Nobody is saying it might be a good idea. So it can't be imposed fait accompli. There's no one who's going to sign it, who's going to take the money, who's actually going to implement this. Instead, it's just a giant, giant whitewash while the Trump administration continues to do everything that Israel has asked of it and the Netanyahu government has asked of it.
What about the fact that at the very moment that Kushner wanted to unroll his plan in Israel, there was this chaos in the government. Netanyahu had just won re-election and then shocked everyone by being unable to form a coalition government. And Kushner's plan was essentially put on hold, it seems.
Absolutely. First time in Israeli history that a government was not able to be formed. And it's indicative of what, you know, certainly critics of the way the Israeli state functions have been saying for a long time, which is that this is not a democracy. And, you know, certainly it hasn't.
But Israel is supposed to be the Middle East's most healthy or maybe only democracy. That's what we keep being told, right?
So we are continually told, based on what I'm not entirely sure, except a really effective advertising campaign, 20% of its population are Palestinian citizens of Israel, and they are denied equal rights. And the nation state law that was passed last summer confirms that. But most immediately, what's interesting is that Netanyahu was unable to form a government, not because of any concerns about Palestinian rights or a deal with the Palestinians or the direction of Israel, but rather internecine fighting between the Orthodox and the far right and power sharing. In Haaretz recently, there was just an op-ed that basically said, is there any space for secular Jews left in Israel? So to have ignored the extent to which Israeli society itself is uncertain of its own path and divided, and presume that it is in a place to be a power broker and engage in any sort of negotiations about anything except its own particular understanding of its own future is ridiculous. And again, goes back to this fact that there has been this incredibly effective campaign specifically targeting an American audience that perpetuates the lie that Israel is a functioning egalitarian state grounded in democratic principles, when in fact it hasn't ever behaved that way.
So many are suggesting, even within the Trump administration, that Kushner's plan be delayed at least until the Israeli government can get its own act together. Now, Israel is going to have snap elections in September, but to put off unrolling Kushner's plan until after that then risks butting up against Trump's own re-election campaign. And so regardless of what's actually in the plan, it seems like the timing itself means that the plan is dead on arrival. What do you think?
One can only hope that the plan is entirely dead on arrival and is shelved. And more importantly, that this fiasco will allow, will ensure that Americans demand that our government return the funding to UNRWA, become at least pretend working towards being an honest broker. So perhaps not allow the annexation of the occupied West Bank, not allow the perpetuation and growth of illegal settlements that take over Palestinian land, not continue the illegal 11-year siege on Gaza that prevents electricity and water and the maintenance of a bare minimum of quality of life inside Gaza. You know, these are really, really basic steps that the United States is directly responsible for allowing and perpetuating.
So what should, is this an issue that is getting much traction here in the United States? What should Americans know about the Israel, about Kushner's peace plan for Israelis and for Israel and Palestinians? Is this an issue that has gotten enough attention here? I mean, we know that there is finally, at least in some factions of the U.S. Congress, some criticism of Israel that has emerged largely as a result of some newly elected members of Congress, and the facade seems to be cracking. Wouldn't any peace plan need some sort of congressional approval?
One would have thought so. And I think we are absolutely seeing that, you know, this shift over the past couple of years certainly solidified under the Trump administration, wherein blanket blind support for Israel has suddenly become, for the first time ever, a partisan issue. And so if you are a Christian evangelical, if you are a Republican, then you are, and particularly if you are over the age of 50, then you are more likely to continue supporting Israel blindly. But the demographics and the polling show that for voters under the age of 30, for Democrats, for progressives, and for increasingly a large percentage of American Jews, uncritical support of Israel is not in their interest. A new poll just came out by the American Jewish Committee that shows that an increasing number of young Jews don't even view support for Israel as part of their Jewish identity. So we are seeing the beginning of a tidal wave shift. Like you have just pointed out, we have members of Congress who not only are openly critical of Israel's continual human rights violations of Palestinians and violations of international law, but also support nonviolent measures of resistance, including the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement.
Now, just, you know, in broad strokes, whatever little we do know of the of Kushner's peace, so-called peace plan, do you have any idea of whether it is a two-state solution or a one-state solution, or is it even that detailed? Because those distinctions matter.
They absolutely matter. And Kushner himself has sort of intentionally backed away from using those terms and said, we're going to take that terminology off the table. But it's also important to note that the idea of an actual two-state solution has never truly been on the table. If you look at all the negotiations building up to Oslo and everything that came after it, Palestinian self-determination, but never control over its own borders, or all of the other aspects of sovereignty that a Palestinian state in a two-state solution would entail. Rather, what has always been under negotiation is what Nora Erekat has so eloquently referred to as allowing Palestinians to decorate the interiors of their own jail cell. If Jared Kushner, I can't imagine, is going any further than that, and I think is going a good deal less. And any solution that does not actually look into fundamental equality between Palestinians and Israelis is doomed to fail.
Well, finally, Sonia, just a question about the damage that Trump has done to Palestinians and to, you know, the Palestinian cause in the embassy move, et cetera. Can a future U.S. president, different from Trump, undo that damage? Is Trump's damage undoable?
I have to believe that everybody is going to be able to recover from the damage that the Trump administration has inflicted, whether Palestinians, other parts of the world, and, you know, for our own populations here in the United States that are also coming under duress, that we will all be able to work together. We will all be able to rise up, and absolutely we'll be able to offer and build an alternative future where we understand that supporting Palestinian rights is just as important as supporting rights for any other person anywhere, be they American or otherwise.
Give out a website where people can find out more about the work that your organization does.
Absolutely, JewishVoiceForPeace.org, or if you're typing in a hurry, JVP.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our website later today. I know, as you said, growing numbers of young American Jews are separating their own faith from unconditional support for Israel and are likely looking for organizations like yours to join in. It's a membership organization, right?
Absolutely. 70 chapters across the country, over 500,000 supporters online, and over 15 student chapters. We're growing every day, and we'd love to have everyone join.
Well, thank you so much, Sonia, for joining us today. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
My guest has been Sonia Meyerson-Knox. She's a media program manager with Jewish Voice for Peace. We've been discussing Jared Kushner's peace plan for the Middle East. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.